All right, so if you want to find some notes, as you know, I don't generally use PowerPoint. I'm not against it. I just would like to have your attention and not get too caught up on things on the screen. But I want to talk to you about the Renegade Pastor's calendar. And this is going to be a two-part session during the time that we have together. And if it sounds rather simple at the outset, hopefully you will find it very helpful and enlightening by the time we're done tomorrow afternoon. The Renegade Pastors Network is a network where we challenge you to abandon average. And we challenge you to say no to average. And over in the Renegade Pastors Network, I'm always asking you to remember your calling. And the truth is, none of us went in ministry to do average things with average people in average ways and get to heaven and say, well, average, good, and average servant. We all went into ministry to make it hard to go to hell from our area, to make a dent in hell, to help people get to heaven, to help people grow in Christ, whatever it might be. But it's probably not this average vision. And so I've thought a lot if we're going to abandon average, if we're going to say no to average, what kind of structure, systems, processes, mindsets, ways of thinking do we need in our life that are different from everybody else? And you know, one of the foundational quotes on which the Renegade Pastors Network is based is this: if you don't know how to grow a church, if you don't know what to do in your leadership, if you're unclear about the next step in your ministry, just look at what the average church down the street does and do the exact opposite, and you'll probably be okay. Because average is always wrong. You know, the average church in America isn't growing. The average pastor in America doesn't feel like they're fulfilling their calling. The average pastor gets up on Monday morning and says, you know, now what? The average church is behind on their budget. Their attendance is declining. Average is really, really bad. I don't want average, and you don't want average. So in thinking about this and thinking about how do I challenge you to stay above average, I always have the challenge on the monthly equipping calls. I try to bring in authors and thought leaders who will challenge you to go against average. And sometimes we're able to get those folks like Gary McIntosh to come and spend more time with us. A big announcement that you're going to hear later is Bill Easom, who was just on the call last month and did a fantastic job challenging all of us. He's going to be at our next Renegade Pastors Conference this fall, and others like that. And then when I do the strategy and briefing, you know, trying to find ways to challenge you to stay ahead and abandon average in that. And then in these talks, you know, how do you take this time and really lay out in more detail, in a deeper way, this idea of abandoning average? So, not trying to kiss up to the Vineyard guys in the room, who I love, by the way. People always say, why do you pick on the Vineyard? Because, like, they just won't accept me. That's why. Because, like, I'm ordained Baptist. I went to a Methodist school, but I'm more Vineyard in my theology, and I just don't know where I fit in. So I've had this unique opportunity to coach all kinds of stripes and pastors. But I was listening to these John Wimber tapes that I tracked down, and Kimberly so graciously converted over to some method that I could listen to. And so Wimber said this. He said, every leader has three resources to work with, and only three. And I, like you, got ready to write this down. You guys know John Wimber, right? Founder of the Vineyard. John Wimber said, every leader has three and only three resources with which to work. And I thought, this is going to be good. And here's what he said. Time, energy, and money. Those are the three resources you have. You have time. And this gift that God gives us, this gift of a day, the gift of a season, the gift of a life, the time that we have between now and either the end of our time here on earth or the end of the earth upon the return of the Lord Jesus. But we have time. But then we also have energy. And Wimber had a very profound definition of energy. He said it's not only your energy, but it's the energy of others that you can mobilize. And I thought that's very insightful, and certainly that deserves an entire talk sometime, that we should talk about that. How do we manage our energy? In fact, tomorrow I had a sneak preview of what Carrick is going to talk about, and he's going to teach you some lessons that he's been learning from a book called The Only Way to Win. And the author of that book is Jim Lohr, L-O-E-H-R. Actually lives right here in Orlando. Maybe we can get him at a future conference. Jim Lohr, before he wrote this book called The Only Way to Win, he wrote a book called The Power of Full Engagement. And I have an opportunity to be trained in that and to go to several live events with that. And the big point that Jim Lohr made in The Power of Full Engagement is that life is not about time management, it's about energy management. And that's really good. In fact, I was driving a very famous pastor home from the airport one time, And I was doing what you would do, asking them questions, even though this pastor was tired and worn out and didn't want a little punk like me asking him all these snoopy questions. But I said, you know, tell me some secrets. What's some insights? What are some things you've learned? And they repeated that same thing. They said, I really live in such a way that I want to maximize my peak periods of energy, and I want to minimize my low points of energy. And so I look at the circadian rhythms of my life and try to manage that. So energy is really important, your own energy. And that book, The Power of Full Engagement, it's worth reading, and you can go online and find webinars and training events around that and managing energy. But energy is not just managing your own energy, it's managing the energy of others. And if God has entrusted you with staff or entrusted you with volunteers or entrusted you with people who want to come alongside of you, whether that's your family or paid or whatever it might be, you want to manage that. And certainly we should talk about that. In fact, in April, we decided yesterday in advanced coaching that I'm going to do a one-day staffing workshop. And we probably won't promote that very widely, but on Thursday, April the 11th, somewhere in the nearby vicinity here, I'm going to do a one-day workshop on finding, hiring, managing, and when necessary, dehiring staff. And if you're interested in that, you can see Scott about that. But that all goes into energy. And then Wimber made a big point about money. You know, we get all caught up about money in the church, but the truth is it takes money to complete a mission. And Jesus talked a lot about that, and we understand that. And sometimes unchurched people, lost people, understand that better than we do. I had one of my great awakenings about money when Journey was doing monthly services in New York. We had not been receiving an offering. And you know, the words you use about an offering are very important. You never take an offering, unless you're in Staten Island where Nick is. And then, otherwise, you receive an offering or you give an offering. Well, I had not been receiving an offering. And so this guy comes up, lost as can be. In fact, I knew his story. He was living with his girlfriend, and he was drinking every night. He was putting himself to sleep. And he comes up, and he's got this wrinkled check in his hand. And he's like, I've had this for the last three monthly services. And he points to the ballroom that we're meeting in. And he's like, I know it costs money around here. And he said, when are you going to let us get involved in this? I said, well, how much is that check? And I said, well, right now, you know, this would be a really good time. And you know, I took his check. And mother may have raised an ugly kid, but not a dumb one. And I cashed it. And we used it for our mission. And then later, as you know, I ultimately decided to start receiving an offering every week, not so much for the money, but for the connection cards. And that became a very convenient way to not only collect the connection cards, but also to receive the offering. But you have to manage the money well. And that would be a really great talk to do sometime in the future. And so maybe in future Renegade Pastors conferences, we can flesh that out more of looking at time and energy and money. But I want to talk about time. And today, I want to look at a very specific tool that you have at your disposal regarding your time, which is your calendar. Because in many ways, your calendar is your time. And what you put on your calendar represents your priorities. What doesn't make it onto your calendar demonstrates that it's probably not as important as perhaps you said it was, because it didn't actually make it on your calendar. And then we all have calendars around us. You know, we've got the calendar program on our computer. Every Gmail, Ymail, Xmail, you know, Scott's new CLI mail, whatever. You know, they have these calendar programs. Every smartphone has a calendar on it. You know, when I was growing up, we had the wall calendar. You know, that's what you had. But I really want to make the most of my days, and I'm sure you do too. And so I've been, over the years, quite fanatical about my calendar. And I actually save all of my calendars. In fact, my wife laughs at me because I got my first day timer when I was 13 years old. When it was back in, remember the day timer kind of things? And I had the one page a day timer. I love that. I did try for a while to do the week at a glance, and I tried to do the monthly thing for a while to try to get that thing down. But I carried it with me everywhere. Along the way. And I was doing computer programming back in that day, and some of you know my story. I won't get into it now. But it taught me to be fanatical about my calendar, because I began to realize that some people get more stuff done in an hour than others. Some people get more stuff done in a week than others. Some people get more stuff done in a month than others. And if you've listened to my time management resource, you know, I tell the story about I bought this book, and it doesn't matter who the author is. He's actually written some great books since, but this was not a great book, but the title stuck with me, and it was called The 90-Minute Hour. And I was intrigued by that. And if you know my principle of off-peak, this was one of the big principles. In fact, I think it was the only principle I took away from that book other than the title. But the title idea just intrigued me about, could you get 90 minutes worth of work done in 1 hour? And I was seeing that. I saw other people who were able to do that. So I became fanatical about my calendar, and you can see that in my life to this day. And some people think all I do is work, and they would be really surprised at how active my family life is and how much fun time I schedule and how much vacation and concerts and things like that that I go to and all of that. But I've tried to be fanatical about that and think a lot about that. In fact, it became a joke for a while that people would give me calendars. More recently, people have started giving me hourglasses. I don't really know why that is. But this is true. Like, it's been a little trend in the gift. But for a while, people would give me calendars. So I was thinking back through some of my favorite calendars. I have a bunch of bulldog calendars. Anybody in here bulldog owners? Anybody? Nobody? What do you have, Daryl? Oh, yeah, English bulldog. That's what I've always had, an English bulldog. What color is yours?
Red,
yeah, he's got the red English bulldog. I had a solid white. Oh, yeah, he's got the flat face and the big arms, all that stuff. They say you start looking like your dog. You think you and I look like bulldogs? Or this? Now, are you a UGA guy, or is there a Texas bulldog store here? I don't know. You just like the bulldogs? Yeah, I've always been a bulldog owner. English bulldog is my preferred, but I'm between bulldogs right now. Last one died, had a brain tumor. It was horrible. We had to put him down, all that kind of stuff. But I'm thinking about next one maybe getting a French bulldog and with the idea that he could travel with me. And so he could just set up here, like, you know, lay right here, like during these conferences. And like if a cell phone goes off, he could run back there and get the cell phone or whatever. The school I went to, the undergrad school that I went to, Gardner Webb University, which back in the day it was Gardner Webb College. But once I graduated, they said, well, maybe there's hope. And they changed it to the university. And we were called, do you remember what we were called, Jimmy? The Running Bulldogs. Okay, so people always thought I had a bulldog because, you know, I went to the University of Georgia. I did marry a Georgia girl, but, you know, they have Ugga, and my dog looked like Ugga. I mean, he was solid white, just a coincidence. My last bulldog was solid white. It's just, you know, the one I picked. But the Gardner Webb was called the Running Bulldogs, and I always laughed at this because have you ever seen a bulldog run? They're really good from, like, here to the end of the room, and that's it. You know, they're, like, out, he's, and then done, like, for the day. We used to do this thing called a dog party in New York City. I can't get off on this too far, but we used to do this dog party. You ever done these kind of outreaches? It's like Petapalooza kind of thing. People are fanatical about their dogs. So we, for years, did an outreach in New York City in Hudson Park, at Riverside Park, and we would do these dog parties. And I would always MC these things because I just absolutely loved it. We would do, like, stupid pet tricks. We would do, like, ugliest dog. It was amazing. I mean, more people would sign up for the ugliest dog than they would the prettiest dog, you know. And I would like, kiss the dogs, and I became known as, like, the dog guy. You know, people would see me out. Oh, you're the pastor that does the dog party, all this kind of stuff. Well, I brought my bulldog to the last one. This is before he got the brain tumor and everything. He's in his prime. I brought him, and he overheated. Now, it's like a February day, but, you know, he overheated because he's, you know, all this. And so they had to take him to the vet. Cost me $600 as part of this. And they put him in this, like, bariatric chamber that cooled him down. Because, you know, his heart's going. I mean, he's shaking, you know, all this stuff. So they had to put him inside this, like, little container. And he just loved it. Like, he kept wanting to buy one of those for the house. He would save his little doggy money to try to get one of those. Every time we walked past the hospital, like, he would pull me in that direction. He just wanted to live inside of that chamber. And I've taken on the same approach to my life. I go up to the hotel room down to, like, 64, man. That's, you know, how we're going to do it. So I love bulldogs. And so people gave me all these bulldog calendars. But then people have given me monkey calendars. I don't really understand that. My dad this year gave me a monkey calendar. So I don't even know what that means. One year in 1988, I still have it, somebody gave me a calendar called the Hot Men of Country.
Now, I don't know that I would put that in there, by the way.
I'm a huge country music fan.
You are.
Scott knows this. Any other country music fans in here? Okay, so we got it. Like you're not going to admit it. Well, I don't know. Maybe. I was like, I don't know. Like, you know, Blake Shelton, anybody? Anybody in here? All right, good. I'm an old country music fan. So, Terry, your country music, raise your hand back there. So, let's talk about country music 1988. This was when country was still ugly. Because back in the day, if you were going to sing a heartbreak song, you had to look like you've had your heart broke. Today, country is pretty. You know, today it's, like, glamorous, and, you know, we've got, like, you know, pretty girls and pretty guys and all that kind of stuff. You know, they're wearing, like, skinny jeans on the country music stuff. In 1988, doggone, it was country. You know, Waylon had just died. Willie looked like he needed to die. You know, and so I'm like, how did they even come up with a dozen of these hot men of country? So anyway, somebody gave me that. And then this past year, somebody gave me a Betty White calendar. I travel with that. And then my favorite has been the Far Side calendars. Remember the Far Side? For my birthday a few years ago, my wife, he doesn't write the Far Side anymore. And so they put them all in this collection. And it's two big volumes, like this wide, this tall, and you can buy the whole thing. And so Kelly found it like at a used bookstore. Where's Tommy? That's where she had to start, Tommy, used bookstore. And bought it in the used bookstore. I have it. If you come to my home office, it's up on top of my bookshelf. I use it to weight down things. And it's got all the Far Side cartoons in it. But these little Far Side daily calendars, you can pull it off. So I've pulled a few of my favorites. If you know the Far Side, he likes to write about heaven and hell. And so this one is all these people. I'll pass these around here. All these people are lined up waiting to check in. So the devil's checking them into the gates of hell right here. So you see the setup. And then it's like, okay, sir, would you like inferno or not inferno? Ha, just kidding. It's all inferno, of course. I just get a kick out of saying that. So we can pass that one around. Then this one's the flip side. It's like a Jeopardy setup. So this is Alex Trebek here. And then it's God. And then this guy over here, his name is Norman. And so God is against Norman in this. And God has 1,065 points. Norman has zero. And the Alex Trebek character is saying, yes, that's right. The answer is Wisconsin. Another 50 points for God. And, uh-oh, looks like Norman, our current champion, hasn't even scored yet. So I like that one. This one is one for your staff meeting next week. It says, the devil is standing here, and he's got the little guy who's been condemned, and there's two doors, and one door says, damned if you do, the other door says, damned if you don't. And the header is, come on, it's either one or the other. You know, that's all around. All right, so this one, the devil, it's in hell, and so here's the flame. The devil's up here, he's like cracking the whip, you know, keeping them all working. So here's all the worker bees down in hell, and this one guy, he's over at the coffee pot getting coffee, and he's saying to himself, oh man, the coffee's cold. They thought of everything. All right, I got a couple more here, let's see. Oh, yeah, here's one that's easy to say. So this one's heaven, and I guess it's supposed to be St. Peter. He's giving him the thing here. It says, welcome to heaven, here's your harp. Okay, then the bottom one is, welcome to hell, here's your accordion. Oh, let's see. Okay, I'll save this one for last. Here's one more. This is the devil and one of his demons are talking, and they're very disappointed because there's this one guy here who's doing his work in hell, and he's like just whistling and having a good time. He's got a big smile on his face, and then the devil says to his demon, you know, we're just not reaching that guy. All right, this is for, I'm a tech geek, and I switched to Mac a few years ago and some of that. But anyway, so the top heading, it says, hell for Apple users. Who uses an Apple? Yeah, okay, a lot of us do. So here's the little guy standing here, and the devil's giving him, he says, welcome to hell, here's your PC. This is hell for Apple users. But then the bottom one, it says, hell for PC users. Welcome to hell, here's your PC. So I love those things, love to laugh, and not so much the hot men of country, but you know, I've been fanatical about these calendars for a lot of reasons. Several quotes along the way have impacted me regarding the calendar. Peter Drucker, and you should basically buy and read everything he's ever written. If you don't know where to start, just start with his Effective Executive. But in that little book, The Effective Executive, he says, efficiency is doing things right. Effectiveness is doing the right things. I'll give you a chance to write that down. Efficiency is doing things right. Effectiveness is doing the right things. Well, your calendar has a lot to do with that. And so how do you personally manage your calendar? What's your plan right now for managing your calendar? And I want you to think about it, because I want to get real specific about your calendar. But you know, do you manage it on your phone? People joke because I still carry a BlackBerry, but the reason why is because of this keyboard. I can just enter things into my calendar so much faster. I would think of something, I would have to go to the iPhone screen and enter it, and I gave it a shot for like a year, but I never could figure it out. You may have figured it out, that's fine. But, you know, do you manage it that way? Do you manage it on your computer? You know, I had a guy who always, on my staff one time, who managed everything on his computer. The problem is he had to take his computer everywhere. You know, so he's, you know, lugging that thing through as part of that. Do you do paper? I'm a huge fan of paper. In fact, I always advise my staff, before you can automate or electronify, I know that's not a word, but before you can automate or electronify anything, you first got to do it on paper. You know, everybody wants a magic solution, and, you know, Church Community Builders has figured a lot of this stuff out, but, you know, some of it just needs to be managed on paper. And, you know, maybe you just need to carry a calendar around with you and just manage it on paper. I want you to think about, how do you manage your calendar? Do you have more than one calendar? I'll get to that a little bit later. But how do you manage that? The truth is, if your calendar is under control, you're probably in control. But if your calendar is out of control, you're out of control. And so if we want to be effective and we want to be efficient, it does come down to this little basic tool of a calendar. Now, I'm not going to get into the history of the calendar. I find some of that fascinating. And I've had a chance to visit some places in the past, in Rome and the UK and places like that, where the calendar was created. But I'll just skip all that for now. But another quote that's impacted me a lot has been one from Tom Peters. If you know my story of being selected as one of the young entrepreneurs back in the day and having the opportunity to travel, I always tell the Harvey McKay story, but Tom Peters was on that same tour as well, and he had just come out with a book called In Search of Excellence. You don't necessarily need to read it, but it's worth finding a summary somewhere of. And then more recently, he's put out some great books. My favorite recent book of Peters, which may be his most recent, is called Little Big Things. And so it's all these little things that have big impact, like the cleanliness of the restroom. You know, it's a little thing, but it has a big impact on your feeling about that. But he likes to give equations. And so one that he gave that we as pastors would have some disagreement with, but it's worth thinking about. He said, you equal your calendar. You equal your calendar. Now, we've probably preached that. Show me your calendar. Show me your checkbook. I'll show you what's important to you. You know, we would expand it just a little bit, but the principle's right. Show me what you're going to do. Show me what you've got scheduled. Show me what's on your calendar, and I'll tell you what's important to you. Brian Tracy took that just a little bit further, and I like Brian. As far as I know, neither Tom nor Brian are followers of Jesus. We could pray for those. I've had the opportunity on a number of occasions to witness to Brian Tracy. Recently gave him a book, and he told me just recently he was reading it line by line. And it was it's a Christian book that talks about some of the questions he was dealing with. But he said in one of his resources that calendar management equals life management, which goes to my point of get your calendar under control, you get your life under control. But of course for us, and I think we would all agree, the Bible becomes our primary source. So what does the Bible say about all of this? I mean, I love Wimber, and I love Peters and Tracy and all that. And Peter Drucker was a follower of Jesus, and you can talk to him when you get to heaven. But, you know, really we look at what the Bible says. So perhaps the most famous verse in the Bible regarding this issue of calendar is Psalm 90, verse 12. I grew up, I didn't grow up in church, but when I became a Christian in 1989 and traveled for 6 or 7 years doing revivals and crusades and things like that, mainly in more independent Baptist, non-charismatic kind of churches where it was KJV or the highway. So most of the scripture I learned early on was in the King James, and the Psalm 90 verse 12 in the King James says, so teach us to number our days. Teach us to number our days. And some years when I was too cheap to buy a calendar, I would print out like a generic calendar, then you would literally have to go through and write January at the top and number it. And I always thought about that verse as you were numbering the calendar. Or even the day sometimes on an airplane, if I've got a little bit of extra time, I'll sit down and number out in my journal the next few weeks and look at my calendar and play with it or whatever. That verse goes on to say that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Yeah, you know that verse, right? So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Isn't that a great phrase? I want to apply my heart unto wisdom. Now, the NIV is very close to that. The NIV says, teach us to number our days aright. All right, so bonus points over the next 2 days if you can use a sentence with the word aright in it, okay? So make a right. No, not that. It's one word, a right. Teach us to number our days aright, says the NIV. You ever play that game, by the way? Backstage on Sundays, you get bored, and so people offer to give you prizes if you can work a certain word into your sermon. You never done that? You people need to live. So here's how this works. You've got a bunch of ruffian buddies, like Jimmy and Tommy and Scott or whatever, and so you're about to go on stage, and they come up to you, and they say, hey, I'll buy your lunch today if you can work in the word.
Ruffian.
Ruffian, like I just said. And so now he owes me lunch today because I worked in ruffian. But the more exotic the word, the better. And it can't be curse words. It can't be something you can't say. But it's got to be, like, kind of strange. It's got to be rather unusual, polemic. Thank you, Tommy. You can buy me dinner. That you've got to work into the sermon. Anyway, bonus points if you can work in the word aright. So teach us to number our days aright. And here's how the NIV finishes it. That we may gain a heart of wisdom. I like the KJV, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom, but the NIV, probably a little closer to the Hebrew, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. The NLT, just to push this a little bit further, because Lord knows I'll beat an idea to death, just the NLT, which is the one I preach from these days, it says, teach us to make the most of our time. Very solid, very direct. Teach us to make the most of our time. It's a prayer unto God. God, teach us to make the most of our time. I have this question that some of you have seen on my post-it notes. If I write you a little note, it says, what's the best use of my time right now? And that's really a prayer that I just pray all the time. What's the best use of my time right now? What's the best use of my time right now? Teach us to make the most of our time. And then it goes on to say, so that we may grow in wisdom. So I hope that's what will happen in the time that we have. As I take you through this talk, I hope you will grow in wisdom. And whether you agree with my ideas or not, or you agree with my process or not, you will develop your own process that will move you greater in wisdom and greater use of your time. Now, just so Gene doesn't feel left out, Eugene Peterson in The Message, he says this, oh, teach us to live well. Teach us to live wisely and well. That's how he translates that in The Message translation. But there are more verses, of course, besides Psalm 90, verse 12, Ephesians 5. Verse 15 and 17 says, so watch your step, use your head, make the most of every chance you get. These are desperate times. That's good. Verse 17 goes on to say, don't live carelessly, unthinkingly. Make sure you understand what the master wants. And so that's really what we're after. We want our calendar, we want our lives, we want our days to be in alignment with God's ways. And that's really what God's will is. God's will is listening to God and then doing what he says. God's will is asking God, what do you want? Then make that what you want and then adjust your life accordingly. Luke 14, 28 in the Message translation, is there anyone here who, planning to build a new house, does it first sit down and figure the cost so you'll know if you can complete it? In other words, God's not against planning. That verse we often apply to money, but I think it could apply to time. Perhaps the most famous passage in Scripture about time is from Ecclesiastes 3. It says, there is a time for everything in verse 1. A season for every activity under the sun. A time to be born, a time to die. Who's the group that sings that song? Turn, turn, turn. The birds? Yeah, the birds. Yeah, so let's not get, now that I've got that in your mind, let's, I'm sure George Strait's done something on it, Terry. I'm certain he did. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to harvest. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to rebuild. A time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance. I was hopeful. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to turn away. A time to search and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. That's a good verse to put up on your desk. A time to keep, a time to throw away. Verse 7. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be quiet and a time to speak up. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. Verse 9, what do people really get for all their hard work? I've thought about this in connection with the various kinds of work God has given people to do. God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart. But even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. I'm going to stop at verse 11 because, unfortunately, Solomon reaches a bad conclusion in verse 12. But he got the setup right. He got the questions right, even though some of the conclusions may have been incomplete. But there is a time for everything. And so how do you make time for everything? What do you do? What do you give priority to? Psalm 39, 4 and 5. This should be our prayer as we proceed on. It says, Lord, remind me how brief my time on earth will be. Remind me that my days are numbered and that my life is fleeting away. My life is no longer than the width of my hand. Is that this way or this way? I'm not sure. An entire lifetime is just a moment to you. Human existence is but a breath. Time crawls along when you're younger, they say. You know, summer vacation seems to last forever when you're 9, 10, and 11. And then when you get old, it's like, oh, is the summer over already? Is the time going so quickly? Where does it all go? And so that verse is true. So let's pray that prayer just right where you're at. Say, Lord, remind me of how brief my time on earth will be. Remind me that my days are numbered and that my life is fleeing away. My life is no longer than the width of my hand. An entire lifetime is just a moment to you. Human existence is but a breath. So if that is true, and I believe it is, and you probably do too, then how do we manage this life? How are we good stewards of our life? What I want to talk to you about now and for the rest of our time is five pillars in your calendar. And I've really struggled with that word pillars, P-I-L-L-A-R-S. Number one, most of you know I grew up with a speech impediment. That's a really hard word for me to say. I have a hard time saying words like yellow and pillow and pillars and things like that. So hopefully I'll say it correctly. But if you've ever been to Greece and you've gone on the tour of the ancient ruins, you've no doubt seen the Parthenon, or at least you have an image of what that might be. But, you know, there are these pillars that hold up the roof. And it was designed that way so that if any one fell, others could hold it up for a while. And so there are these pillars. Now, I've debated if this should be called anchors, if this should be called guideposts, if these should be called stepping stones, if these should be called checkpoints, and I could keep going on words that I played with. But I think these are pillars, these are anchors in your calendar. And if you get these five pillars in your calendar, if you put these in your calendar, then it seems like everything else will be built correctly. Everything else will be able to stand. You'll have a life that can stand strong for the ages. But what we often do is we put the wrong things as the anchors in our calendar. We put the wrong things as the pillars in our calendar. Give you a quick example. Any of you have my time management resource? Yeah, I get into trouble with that because the first thing I tell you to schedule in the time management resource is your vacation. Yeah, vacation. So a lot of people get upset with me about that. They're like, no, it should be like your time with the Lord or whatever. And so what I know is if you get certain things first, then everything else kind of falls in its place. So these are pillars that you want to schedule. And if you get these five anchors right, you'll be able to navigate everything else you need to do. If you don't get these right, your calendar is going to spin out of control. And so these anchors, these pillars, help ensure that your calendar will be under your control and under God's control. And so I want to give you five of these. Now, as we get into our list, and we'll try to cover one or two before our lunch break, as we get into this, there's a couple of parallel thoughts I need to give you. One is that in order for this to work, you have to keep a unified calendar. You need one calendar that has everything you need to do on it. I'll tell you a story I don't think I've ever told outside of perhaps advanced coaching. A couple years ago when I felt the freedom to start a new Journey campus and realized that I was going to be starting one in South Florida. If you know the story on that, I felt the freedom to start another location for the first time in 10 years. I've been pastoring the Journey's Manhattan campus. I was very happy. I was very fat and happy I didn't know Steve Reynolds at the time, so I literally was fat and happy. And other people had gone out to start campuses for the Journey, and I began to sense in September of 2009 that maybe I could start the next one. And this was freeing because the first time I'd ever felt that way. And I began to pray, and I thought God said Boston, and he was saying Boca, and I said Boston, and he said Boca, and I said Boston, and he said Boca. I said, okay, I'll fly down and take a look. And so for the last couple of years, I've been leading the Journey's campus down in Boca Raton. But as I was making that transition, I was looking at all of our campuses, and I knew I wouldn't be there every day to give leadership to our larger campuses in Manhattan. And what I realized is the missing piece in our systems was not the system. It wasn't even the checklist. It was the calendar. That we did not have one unified church calendar. And so this is a talk that I'm going to come back to at next year's Systems Boot Camp. But we began to develop this calendar, this unified calendar of literally every single thing that we did at the journey. And it's massive. And no, I'm not going to give you a copy of it. Because it needs explanation, and we're not ready to distribute this yet. But it's massive. In fact, I think this year's calendar, Carrick, we're already up to like 60-something pages.
I think it's beyond that.
It's beyond that. Okay, yeah. It's this massive thing. And it doesn't constrain us as much as it reminds us of what we're going to be able to do. And we are constantly updating the past and correcting the past and changing it to what we actually did do versus what we said we were going to do. And then, you know, thinking ahead in the future. And we've created this massive unified calendar for all of our locations. So now when we start a new location, we can look at what we did and we can decide, do we want to do it or not do it? It's not constraining, don't get me wrong on that, but it actually has become one of the most freeing documents that we've ever done. In fact, by putting together this massive unified calendar, the staff stress level has gone way down. You know, it was stressful to put it together, but now that we've got it, it's gone way down. So when I talk about keeping a unified calendar, I'm not saying that you need a calendar of everything that's going on in your church. Like, that unified calendar is not my calendar, because I'm only involved in pieces of that. So the only thing I need on my calendar are the things from the unified calendar that involve me personally. So I only need the meetings that involve me on my calendar. I only need the Sundays that involve me on my calendar. I only need the pieces of the puzzle that involve me. Because this calendar talks about what goes on in kids, and it talks about what goes on in groups, and it talks about what goes on in stewardship, and I'm not involved in all of that. But I do need a unified calendar of everything that involves me. So the journey calendar is a piece of my calendar, but it's just a piece. My family has a pretty active calendar. If you've got more than one kid, you know, every time you add a kid, it's like an exponential complication in your life. You had grandkids, it even goes from there. So I need to know the things that involve me in my calendar. You know, things that I've committed to my wife, Kelly, things that I've committed to my son, Alexander. I need a family calendar. I don't need to know everything that my brother's doing, but I need to know the things that involve me. And that needs to be on my calendar. Then, you know, I have this other life with Church Leader Insights. I'm constantly battling with them because in my life, family is, and my personal stuff is always first, and then family, and then the church. And then if there's any time left over, I'll do a conference like this or an event like that. I don't need to know everything they're doing. People always say, hey, did you see that email that Church Leader Insights? So now I'm like, what email? I don't know. You know, these things go. I mean, they manage all of that. I just need to know what they're expecting from me, what I need to write, what I need to produce. But that needs to go into my calendar. Things that I'm working on, deadlines that I have, commitments that I have. I just signed a contract to write a book called The Renegade Pastor, Abandoning Average in Your Life and Ministry. It'll be an introduction to this network, and we'll give it to everybody who joins the network in the future and get you a copy when it comes out. And I'm on a tight deadline. For the first time in 6 years, I didn't have a book coming out this fall. I was really excited about that. In fact, I'd already planned stuff. Other stuff to do because I didn't have a book coming out this fall. And then this popped up on the radar, and Regal said, well, if you can get it done, we'll release it this fall. I said, well, when do you need it? This was like on January the 3rd. I said, when do you need it? They said, how about March 31? So I'm like, yeah, that'll be easy enough. I'm not doing anything on March 31. You know? I could probably stay up all night on March 30th writing this thing, you know? And so I'm a fast writer. I'm just not a good writer. That's why I have help. But so I tackled this. I said, okay, I'll try to do it. And, you know, I had to add that into my calendar. You know, so if you wonder where I'm at tomorrow morning, you know, when you're down having breakfast, I'm up in the room trying to grind out, you know, the next chapter of the Renegade Pastor's book. I'm 3 chapters in, by the way. And if you were at the Renegade Pastor's conference back last October, that's the format. The 7 commitments of a Renegade Pastor is the format. So I'll recycle stuff over and over. But anyway, you need that in your calendar. But what I need is I need one unified calendar that represents my life. You know the old proverb, the person who has 2 watches never knows what time it is, right? The person who has 2 calendars or 3 calendars never knows where they're supposed to be. And one of the first questions that I used to ask when I did more personal consulting for pastors is, let me see your calendar. And here's what pastors would have. They would have like a calendar at home on the refrigerator that was like their family calendar. Then they would have something like was their personal calendar, like little meetings, little things they were supposed to be. And then like their assistant would keep up with the church calendar. And I don't really know how that would work because they were always missing stuff. And you spend a lot of time like you're at the office, but, well, I'm wondering if I'm supposed to be somewhere else. Or you're at home and you're wondering if you're supposed to be somewhere else. And so there has to be this one unified calendar. Not of everything that's going on in your church, not of everything that's going on in your family, but everything that involves you. I'll say more about that tomorrow afternoon, but that could be a big takeaway because if you find yourself missing out on stuff, not being where you need to be, or something sneaking up on you, Oh, I forgot we had that. Well, let's put you in charge of a church twice your size if you keep forgetting that you didn't have that. So you've got to have this unified calendar. And I know I'm raising some issues that I hope you're finding somewhat fanciful. Like, so you've got like your spouse schedule on your calendar. And if you've been married for more than a year, you know that's a really important thing to do. You know, so you got like family. You know, yes. And what I do is I schedule certain things first and then work everything else around it. Like I worked you around stuff I thought was more important this week. The reason we're doing it this week is because I couldn't find anything more important to do this week. I mean, that's true. I mean, if my son had had something this week, you know, he had to have an endoscopy last week. Remember, we were on the call. I was asking you to pray for him. If that had been this week, we wouldn't be doing the conference this week. Because I set the priorities, then I manage the priorities on the calendar. We'll get to that as we go along. But that's not a dismissal to you. I love you. I love doing this. It's a privilege for me to do this. But it was this week, because of all the weeks that I have, this is the week where your number four on the priority list could be number one on the priority list because I didn't have anything else competing. So we'll get to that. Second thing that you're going to get into as I give you this list is you're going to be, okay, if I put all five of these things in my calendar, and I know you don't know what they are yet, but you're going to start thinking, if I put all five of these things in my calendar, when am I going to do, like, work? Because, like, you know, ministry, like, you know, prepare sermons. Anybody got a sermon to prepare this week? Yeah, I've got a sermon to prepare. You know where I'll be tomorrow, right at the end of this conference? Doing my run-through. That's where I'll be. How many of you know the sermon run-through idea? I mean, Carrick was smart. He got his done yesterday. And, you know, I've got all day with you today, and so I'll have to do it tomorrow. But we're going to get it done before Thursday midnight, because we have the Thursday midnight rule. So, yeah, I've got to prepare sermons too. So you're saying, well, okay, well, you know, if I put these things in my calendar, how do I get anything else done? Because you're going to start thinking this list of five can be so consuming that it doesn't leave a lot of time for anything else. And you're right. You're right. Because what these five pillars will do is they will force you to be more effective in other areas. I'm going to get to Sabbath in a moment, but you know what the Sabbath does for me? It forces me to be effective on the other 6 days. I get more done by having a Sabbath day off in the previous 6 days than if I worked all seven. And here's why. It's called Parkinson's Law. Thank you. Parkinson's Law. I want you to write that down. Parkinson's Law. A lot of things that many of you know, and it's very tough to teach a class like this because you know as much as I do about most of this stuff, and you know the 80-20 rule, and you can teach the 80-20 rule. We need to be reminded of the 80-20 rule, and when we do the talk on energy sometime in the future, we'll get to the 80-20 rule, but I had to come up with something that maybe you don't know. So I want to give you Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's Law, the history of that is a guy by the name of Cyril, C-Y-R-I-L, how would you pronounce that? Cyril? Anybody here named Cyril? All right, well, I was going to give you a free pass to the VIP lunch, so too bad. Cyril, or easier for me to say, Northcote Parkinson. That's the guy's name. He's a famous British historian in 1955, and a book that he wrote, actually, it was originally an article for The Economist, and it later became the focus of one of his books called Parkinson's Law, The Pursuit of Progress, which you do not need to read. Best thing I can tell you sometimes is just books you don't need to read. Okay, like Gary McIntosh's stuff, you should read it all. In fact, they have a book table back there. You should get everything they've got. And if they don't have it, go online and get it. I mean, you should just have it in your library. You know, after I got off the call with Bill Easton the other day, I looked at my library, I eyed it up, I went and bought everything that I don't have, and some stuff I had in storage, but it was just easier to order another copy. So, ever done that? Okay, I'll just get another one. I'm not going to drive across town. See, Kimberly, I really am this neurotic. It's not like something you just see. But so you don't need to read this, but here's Parkinson's Law now that I've tried to whet your appetite a little bit. Work expands to fill, F-I-L-L, to fill the time available for its completion. Isn't that good? Work expands to fill the time available for its completion. Here's Scott's Law. Nelson's lecture will expand to fill the time I give him. He said, well, 2 hours? I only see about 15 minutes on your notes. You better pull out the old Far Side cartoons. There's an article, if you go to a website, and I don't know this website enough to recommend everything they say, but there's a website called lifehack.org. I do know that there's a couple of other sites with similar titles that I found to be really helpful, and I found some good stuff on this one. They have an article, if you go to lifehack.org and you search Parkinson's Law, you will find an article called How to Use Parkinson's Law to Your Advantage. I want to give you a couple outtakes of this. It's worth reading the article. Work expands to fill the time available for its completion. You agree with that?
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed the sermon will expand to the time allotted?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, so I think it's a very dangerous Sunday when I think, I just don't know if I'll take my entire time today. You ever said that? You know, that's usually like the Sunday you go over. We have a countdown clock, like that counts backwards on the stage. You have anything like that? It's really a helpful tool, and I'm pretty good at it. Like, I can pretty much land it. In fact, the other day I had a sermon. I was telling Carrick, I said, "Look, I'm afraid I'm going to go over. I need to land it quickly. Do you have any advice?" He's like, "Yeah, just crash land your sermon like you usually do." So I was like, 2 minutes on the clock, heads down, ladies and gentlemen, we're going down. In fact, one of the greatest compliments I ever received was about the countdown clock. I was speaking in chapel at Liberty University, and Dr. Towns wasn't supposed to be there. He told me he was sick, and I'm just about to get up to speak. And I feel somebody punch me really hard from behind, and I knew it was him. And he had made it over, even though he wasn't feeling well, to hear me speak in chapel. And I had to give the invitation that day to the television audience, because not every chapel is televised, but this particular one was. So it's kind of like, no matter what time, where you are in your sermon, or what happens, when that countdown clock hits a certain number, you've got to give the evangelistic invitation. Because, you know, that's the cutout, the cutaway in the TV show. So I did it. And, man, I was nervous. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, I could see it coming. Sweat's, like, pouring down off of me. You know, I see Elmer leaning in behind me. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to get punched again. And apparently I hit it. And he gave me one of the greatest compliments I've ever received. He said, nobody's hit that and done so well since Doc, which was Jerry Falwell. And I've carried that with me. And so I take those times. I take it seriously, you know. And I try to hit it. I don't always hit it. Sometimes I go over. In fact, I'm often backstage telling the backstage coordinators, look, if I go over on time, just go to real time, you know, because it'll go from the countdown to real time, and I know when the next service is, all that. But your sermon will do that too, and you know, you set a time, and you try to hit it. So here's a few call outs from this. It says, Parkinson's Law, work expands to fill the time available for its completion, means that if you give yourself a week to complete a 2-hour task, then psychologically speaking, here's what's dangerous, listen to this, the task will increase in complexity and become more daunting so as to fill that week. It's not just that the task expands, okay? It's not just that you drag it out and, you know, you spend all your time, you know, searching for your name on Google or something. But psychologically speaking, the task will increase in complexity. In other words, you will make the task seem bigger. You will then play it up. You'll begin to tell people like, oh, I've got this daunting task in front of me. And in your mind, that little task will just get bigger and bigger, and it'll become like that gremlin in your schedule that, oh, it's just so daunting. Oh, I got to put it off again. It's a 2-hour task. You know, but if you stretch it out over a week, I think that's really profound. He goes on to say, it may not even fill the extra time with more work, but just stress and tension about having to get it done. By assigning the right amount of time to a task, we gain back more time, and the task will reduce in complexity to its natural state. I don't mind a complex task. And if I'm going to tackle it, I want to tackle it in its natural state. You know, I don't want to, not in its inflated state. Another quote here. It works, talking about Parkinson's Law. It's not some kind of, he makes this point that it's not some kind of magic trick, because technically if you took the Parkinson's Law too far, you could just say, well, I'll give 2 minutes to every task. You know, so it's about allocating the right amount of time to every task, just no more than is needed. So it's what's needed, but no more. And he says it works because people give tasks longer than they really need. Sometimes because they want some leg room or buffer, but usually because they have an inflated idea of how long the task takes to complete. You ever had that happen? You know, you think it's going to take something, but then you get in there and just drive it down. And it's like, oh, I got done earlier than I thought. We'll talk tomorrow about working in 90-minute blocks. You know, as you learn to work in 90-minute blocks, which is a natural focus concentration period inside of your body that God's wired you up to work that way, you actually get to the point where you're getting things done in like 55-minute blocks. Because once you learn to master the 90-minute blocks, you'll be surprised at how much you can get done. We sometimes joke that there are those days at the journey, and Carrick and I talk about this kind of stuff because we both are early morning, get it done kind of people. We often joke that sometimes we get more done by 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning than sometimes we get done the rest of the day. Now, it's not because we're all that productive. It just means nobody's bothering us. You know, if I roll in the office at 6:30, or, you know, now I just walk out to my office out back. But if I just walk out there, sometimes I can just get done in that first magic hour, you know, the 3 or 4 weeks worth of work. So sometimes I tell people I've got a task that only a flight across country can get done, because I just need that concentrated time. You know, I get that window seat back in the exit row and just grind it out, you know, on a flight across country. So it's really interesting, this psychological stuff. We all talk about working harder, not smarter, but think about ways you can apply Parkinson's Law to your life. So he gives two that I want to hit. Make a list of your tasks and then divide them up by the amount of time it takes to complete them. Okay, so this is where it starts. And I'll talk to you tomorrow about how you don't start the day till you finish the day and some of the other ways to make a list of your tasks. But here's something you do. You make a list of your tasks and then you divide them up by the amount of time it takes to complete them. Okay, so sermon prep, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours over the course of the week, meeting with staff, 1 hour, you know, returning emails, you know, an hour a day, whatever it is, you know, just whatever you think it's going to take. Then, here's the twist, then give yourself half that time to complete each task. You have to make the time limit as crucial, or see the time limit as crucial. Treat it like any other deadline. Greatest gift you can give a writer, you know what it is? A deadline, yeah. I mean, I'd never write a sermon if Sunday didn't come every 6 days, you know? So he goes on, treat it like any other deadline. Part of reversing what we've been indoctrinated with is to see the deadlines you set for yourself as unbreakable. So treat the deadlines you set for yourself just like the deadlines your boss or your board or somebody else would set for you. That's really powerful, right? Now, you know, as you learn, you know, some things you will be able to do half the time, some things you won't, then you adjust accordingly, but you begin to see how this works in your life. And then he says, at first, this will be partially an exercise in determining how accurate your time projection for tasks are.